Hello and welcome to my show, Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing on UK Health Radio. I'm Dora Walsh and I've been working in the field of natural and functional medicine for 14 years. I'm a qualified nutritionist and nutritional therapist, and I support my clients to overcome chronic health concerns like hormonal imbalances, digestive problems, chronic fatigue, autoimmune conditions, skin concerns, low immunity and more. You can find out more about me on my website, www.nutriheal.net, and also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Well, this week, I'm going to be talking with Julie Clark, who's a registered nutritional therapist with a BSc in nutritional medicine and author of Baby-Led Weaning, Step by Step. We're going to be talking about family health, children's health, and stressed mums. And nutrition around this topic. It's so important that our children have the right nutrition, as it can help them to develop really well, to grow well physically, and also the brain as well is very important. And we're going to talk about this and all of the issues around nutrition for family health, children's health, and also stressed mums. Now, you can find more information about Julie Clark on her website, julieclarknutrition.co.uk, and you can also find her on Facebook and Instagram. Just look up Julie Clark Nutrition. Welcome to the show, Julie. It's great to have you here.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I do love getting recommendations, and you were recommended to me by a lady called Karen, who's an expert, a nutritionist, and also an expert in hair mineral analysis, which I'm very interested in. And she said you are a great person to speak to because you're specializing in all aspects of child and infant nutrition, including baby-led weaning. And also you're the author of Baby-Led Weaning Step by Step, which is very interesting. Just before we start our interview, can you just remind us where people can get that book?
Yeah, it's available on Amazon and all good bookshops and via my website.
Fantastic. So your website is julieclarknutrition.co.uk and the book is Baby-Led Weaning Step by Step. I know on there you've got a lot of information on how to contact you and what you do, and you're an expert in this area. Now, before we go again into talking about this important topic and how kids and families can benefit, can you tell us a bit about your story and how you came to be an expert in this area?
Yeah, no worries. So I became a nutritionist because I had chronic fatigue in my late teens, early 20s. And at the time I was working as an engineer in a very male dominated industry and was under a lot of pressure and had chronic fatigue, which, you know, this was a long time ago now because I'm coming up for 51. So it was known as yuppie flu at the time, and doctors didn't really know too much about it and what to do. And it led me down this route of looking at my total well-being, nutrition and mindset and everything to do with health. And so I retrained because I basically got myself well by using food and mindset, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then because of the energy side of things has always been a fascination to me, because you mentioned in your intro that you deal with chronic fatigue as well, because it's something that is quite difficult to explain. It's not something that people can see that you've got when you've got no energy, but it impacts every single thing in your life. Later on, when I had children, I realized that the energy side of things is really important. So I started working with mums as I'd become a mum and had to manage energy and things through the work I was doing with nutrition. And then I became really fascinated with children's health, because in my own discovery of what had led me down the route to chronic fatigue, a lot of it had come through my childhood and how I was brought up and what I'd been eating. And it became really, really fascinating to me, that connection between food, especially up to the age of 8, which I'm sure we'll come on to at some point.
That's amazing. So just so I know, Julie, what were you eating when you were a kid that you think could have led to the chronic fatigue later in life?
Well, it wasn't just the food, but the food was very, very traditional British type of food. You know, I would have Weetabix for breakfast with sugar on, and then I would have a sandwich for lunch and then pasta for dinner. And in when I was doing my discovery into what was going on with my health, I discovered that I had an issue with wheat. So my diet was very heavy in wheat. And there was a lot around my mum's pregnancy with me and just things going on in that early life that just impacted my health. And I got to that tipping point where I was very stressed at work, and it was so sudden, Dora. It was like someone had flicked a switch and it just everything crashed down at that time.
Wow. Now, you said you were having like these heavy wheat cereals when you were a kid with sugar on top, sandwiches for lunch, pasta for dinner. Obviously, that's a lot of wheat. And I know we know now that a lot of people have an issue with it, not everybody. And the issue is also the sugar that we add to these products. Like you say, for breakfast, adding, and I did the same when I was a kid, adding a lot of sugar to my cereal in the morning. And it seems like this is normalized for kids. It's almost like, oh, this is going to make them eat their breakfast, so let's add it on so that they eat it. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think we're normalizing sugar for children?
Yeah, I definitely have a bit of an issue with this normalizing sugar, because I've got, although I'm, like I said, I'm coming up for 51, I've got a 10-year-old. So, you know, I've had my children late in life, and she's at primary school, and the breakfast club menu is still just really processed cereals and sugar and white bread toast and jam. It's all carbs and all sugar. And then at school, when they do well at something, they're rewarded with Haribo. And
ooh.
Yeah, and I have an issue, and I have such an issue with this, because as somebody who wants my children to grow up with a really good diet, It takes away that little bit of, you know, flexibility that I've got, because I don't want to be too pressurized and make, you know, I don't want to make sweets and cakes and things bad. But when they have it at school all the time, it takes away my flexibility to give them outside of school. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because they're kind of used to having that sweet taste. And therefore, maybe your food might not seem as palatable. I'm not saying it's not good, by the way, Julie.
No, and it is a, it's that's not the problem. I think one of my biggest concerns with it is teaching children from a young age that when you do well, food is the answer. You get a reward. You get a food reward that isn't very good for you because you've done well. And as we know, Dora, myself and you know, working with women in particular, that we have to, as nutritionists, undo all of that brain conditioning later in life when they get stuck on the diet wagon.
Yes, yeah, I've got you. No, this is something we should talk about in another show, definitely. We could talk all day, Julie. Now, just going back to that topic of sugar. Now, say if somebody's got a pretty healthy diet at home, say they had breakfast at home, and then they had, like, obviously maybe packed lunch at school and dinner at home, but then they had these things on top, maybe through prizes at school or parties or outings and sweet stuff. Is that okay?
It's about balance. And in some way, I hate that word, but it is, like I touched on it slightly, that I don't want my children to think that food is good and bad. I want them to be able to nourish themselves. So they do have, we do have cakes and we make them, and they do have sweets and we have ice creams when it's, you know, hot at the seaside. But it's the amount of constant sugar in children's diets. I see a lot of food diaries from children, and the parents will often think that diet is good, but it's got so much sugar in it that they don't realize.
So give me an example.
It will be things like bars that are kind of advertised as being healthy that are full of sugar. It will be the school dinners aren't very good, actually, for most schools. Not all of them. Some are really good. But most of the schools they have a dessert, their dinner, they always have a dessert, and it's pretty much always sugar loaded. And then you've got the cereals and the jams and the yogurts, and even crisps have sugar in them. And, you know, it's in places that you wouldn't expect to find. But when you're looking at a food diet for a child and you add it up and you weigh that against the amount of vegetables that they're eating, there's always the balance is off, you know?
Got you. Okay. So obviously you talked about a lot about the food in schools and nutrition in schools. And you said, obviously, unfortunately, it falls down in many areas. How can, I don't know if you have any experience in how to encourage schools to update their menus with healthier options, or should people be thinking about taking their own lunches to school instead? And then what should they be taking?
Yeah, that's a big question. And again, whenever anybody with, you know, some clout behind them, like Jamie Oliver tried to change the school menus, and look what happened there. That we seem to be stuck in this this eat well model, which is so out of date now for what we now know. And that's what we're still teaching our children. We're still teaching them an out of date food pyramid model. And so I think we can definitely do, we could definitely improve how we teach children about nutrition and how to cook as well, because that's another thing that seems to be an issue with schools. They don't always have the facilities, and there's so much emphasis on maths and English and science that we kind of lost the importance of just cooking is a basic life skill, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. Now, you mentioned the out-of-date food pyramid model. For our listeners that maybe don't know what that means, what does that mean?
So it's a diagram that goes through the food groups, and it goes up into a pyramid, or it's a circle, and it has an element of sugar and sweets on there, and it has dairy, and it has meat and fish, and on the outset it looks okay, but actually, you know, when we start to drill it down and we know more about what's happening with obesity and the current situation, we know that out of the biggest problem with that model, as you will probably know, Dora, is that it's very carb happy, right? It's very, very carb happy, and it doesn't take into consideration things like the good fats and nuts and seeds and, you know, all those types of things.
Yes. I think I've seen this one where it basically, the pyramid showing everything you need to eat in order of importance, and at the bottom is based on all carbs. Now, we're not saying carbs are bad.
No, absolutely.
It's just that it's not the most important thing. And in fact, I wish they'd made a plate and divided the plate so that we could see really, you know, that maybe a quarter of the plate would be carbohydrates.
Yeah.
Quarter exactly. Would be like a lean protein. And half of the plate should be multicolored veg with some nice good fat sprinkled on top, like nuts and seeds or olive oil or something like that. Is that what you're getting to?
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, you've just described that perfectly. And when I talk to children about their diets, I always, you know, do it in a fun way. But ultimately, we're looking at half of that plate being made up of fruits and vegetables with an emphasis on the vegetables. And the essential fats are so important. But, you know, I was born in the 70s and I've been very much brought up in that era of low fat is what you wanted to do, and we now know that was so wrong.
Definitely. Now, Julie, we're only about to talk about nutrition in schools and also getting the introduction of Foods Right after a few messages from our commercial partners.
The station that makes you feel good. It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself on the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchsip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% using the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We're here with Julie Clark, registered nutritional therapist and author of Baby-Led Weaning Step by Step. You can find out more about her on julieclarknutrition.co.uk. Now, Julie, we were talking about nutrition in schools and about how they're basing a lot, how they were kind of moving towards basing a lot of the food they're offering on the out-of-date food pyramid. And then we talked a bit about how maybe we could be structuring food choices in a bit in a healthier way. Just to finish off that point before we get into introducing foods the right way, should people be, if the food is unhealthy in the school and we can't change it, if we haven't been able to change it, should parents be thinking about creating a healthy packed lunch for their kids?
Yeah, oh, that's such a controversial question as well. It's such a difficult one because children want to fit in with everybody at school. And in primary school, up until a certain age, they get free school meals. And as parents, we're really super busy, most of us. And making packed lunches is just another thing to add to your, you know, ever lengthening to-do list. So it is about weighing it up. I have in the past I've recommended that some of my clients come off of school meals if we're working specifically on, you know, some serious health issues or even things to do with attention problems, behavioural problems, because that lunch meal does tend to be quite carb and sugar heavy, which we know can impact behaviour, mood, attention, etc. So, I mean, what I try and do with my children is a bit a mixture. I know not all schools do that. So on a Wednesday, they typically have a roast dinner. So they have a roast dinner, and on Friday they have fish and chips, which they like. So I do a bit of a mix and match, and then of course make their meals as healthy as I can outside of that. But yeah, to answer your question in a simple way, it depends on the school as to what they're providing, but definitely, you know, if you can do a packed lunch, it can be better. But then if you've got a fussy eating child, you've got to take that into consideration as well, because a packed lunch may not be healthy if they're limited on what they will eat. Oh, it's such a difficult and complicated subject, this, Dora.
Yeah, I can tell. Now, what about getting the introduction of foods right? You mentioned at the beginning that it's really important to, in this time from zero to eight, to get the introduction of foods right. Why is that, and what should people be doing?
Okay, so up until the age of eight, there's a lot of brain development going on, and it's where we kind of lay down the blueprint of our learned behaviours and habits. So how we view food, how food is the relationship that our parents have with food is so key in those first 8 years, because if we are in an environment where mum maybe is always on a diet, or there's a lot of pressure around food, or you're shown love with food, or you don't have enough food, it all gets laid down in the brain and can cause some issues later on. So the foundation in terms of the brain and habits is important, but also from a health perspective, for the growth and development, again, those first 8 years are so, so vital. It's where we lay down our mineral reserves, and we know that in studies that the diet that we have in the first 8 years can impact our health. It can determine what our health will be in the future as an adult.
Well, that's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is really. It's so fascinating, though. I don't think I've been doing this job now for 22 years, and I never ever get bored, or I just still find it fascinating how much food can impact not only how your body is, but how you feel and how you respond to things. And it's just amazing, isn't it, Dora? You know yourself working in this field. Incredible. Yeah,
definitely. I was interested in what you said about brain development, because there's a lot of brain development going on until age 8 and obviously after as well. But you said this is a key time to get the nutrition right. Now, when you're talking about brain development, I know you said there's a blueprint of learned behaviors and habits, but what about the brain development in terms of neurological development and getting the right foods in there to fuel that so that they have really good cognition and thinking, mood? Can we talk a bit about that? Because I know this is a struggle for a lot of kids today, and unfortunately they sometimes get diagnosed or medicated, and maybe, I'm not saying for everyone, but maybe that really isn't the issue. The issue is their nutrition.
Yeah, it's a really good subject to look at, because at the end of the day, the brain is made up of a lot of fat. And how I describe it is that to children is that if you wanted to send a message to your friend who's on the other side of the room as quickly as possible, you wouldn't want that message to have to go through some thick, really sticky, hard butter. You want some oil down there that you could just slide the message through. And that's kind of how I view the brain. So the essential fats are so important. But how many children actually eat these essential fats? How common is it in the diet? I think it is becoming more common now, but I think that there's been a problem with that side of things. And then obviously we've got to impact things like the sugar, the processed foods, the lack of key nutrients, key minerals as well to do with the brain.
Got you. Now, when you talk about essential fats, just for our audience, in case they're not sure what that means, what is an essential fat?
Yeah, so an essential fat is something that we have to eat because our body can't make it. But the essential fats are made up of the omega-3, which is the most important one. And yeah, we get that from things like fish, seeds and nuts. Seeds can be really, really useful and really easy to get into a child's diet. I think lots of parents kind of panic about this initially, but you can use ground seeds in that cereal, even if that cereal is Weetabix with sugar on it.
Got you. Now, could you grind them and keep them, or would they go rancid, or do you have to grind them each time?
Well, if we were going to be really purist about it, the ultimate solution is to grind them fresh. But it's a bit like that argument between dried pulses and tinned pulses. I would rather you had the tinned pulses than no pulses if you haven't got enough time. And it's the same with the seeds. You can get them ground in the vacuum pack, and then you can keep them in the fridge.
Got you. And you'd add that, because you wouldn't believe, Julie, how I hide things in my daughter's cereal. I feel so guilty when I'm talking to you, because at the moment, what I do, she's gone very sugar centric. And I'm trying to cut it down, but she's on this granola, which you know is very sugary. But then I cut the granola with half pure oats. So then I slow down the sugar rush. And then I add in today, before she wasn't looking, you wouldn't believe what I added in. I added in flax seeds, crushed flax seeds. She can't see it. It's mixed in. That's going to give her some vegetarian omega-3. Then sometimes I add in ground almond powder because a bit of protein in there.
Absolutely.
I also added in powdered probiotics, so she can't see it. And then she does get a bit suspicious. So have you added something? I'm like, no, I haven't added anything. But it's amazing. I know she's going to get a bit of the sugary taste, but she's going to get a lot of other stuff in there, isn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. How old is she, Dora?
She's 8 and a half now.
Yeah, so not too much younger than my daughter. And yeah, I do the same with my children with, you know, burgers. If I make burgers, I put all sorts of stuff in there, any sauces. And that's just become a normal part of my, you know, my cooking in order to support them. But there is that balance between also getting them to help prepare food so they know what's going in there. And, you know, my oldest child is 12. He doesn't like certain things, but I will make something, and afterwards, after he's eaten it, I will say, did you like it? And if he says yes, I say, I actually put some courgette in that, or I put mushrooms in. And so he knows. And so it's reinforcing, it's not as bad as I think. And I say to him, not everybody likes a tomato picked off of the bush, but people like tomato sauce on a pizza. So maybe you're someone who likes courgette when it's grated in a burger, but yes, you don't like it chopped up in roasted vegetables, and that's okay.
It's good to explain, because sometimes they do have this mindset, well, no, I'm not having that, I'm not having this, I'm not having that. And then you have to be very inventive. But I love this communication, because you're teaching them and opening the mind, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think it's really important to also take any pressure away from children. So I do work with a lot of fussy eating children as well, and there's a lot of pressure around it. And it's like, just take the pressure away. And, you know, I always say to my children, you don't have to, if you don't like the dinner, you don't have to eat it, but there's nothing else. And then we have a really good, nice breakfast.
Yeah, this is a good one. I always say with my daughter, sometimes I want her to try things and she says she doesn't want to try, but I know deep down that if she tried it, she'd like it. So I talk to her, because I know she trusts me, and I'll say, listen, there's no pressure. I'm not forcing you to eat that whole plate. But what I do want you to do is I want you to try it and tell me honestly, don't decide whether you're going to like it or not. Just try it and tell me, do you like it? And then just most of the time she says, oh, mummy, yummy, I like it.
Yeah,
just opening the mind. But she trusts me a lot, and she knows I'm not going to force her. So then she'll eat it. And that's how I've managed to get her onto a lot of things. But it can be tricky, definitely.
Yeah, it definitely can. But I think that taking the pressure off, like you've just explained as well, but encouraging, there's a difference between encouraging and pressurizing. And I think if a child knows that, if they're trying something new, if they don't like it, they can spit it out and no one's going to go crazy, then that's fine. You know, we don't always like everything. You know, I talk to children about, when I deal with children, I always get the rest of the family involved, and I ask the child, you know, what does daddy like? What's his favourite foods? What does he not like? What about mummy? And so that they understand that we all have our individual preferences, and we're not going to like everything, and that's okay.
Yeah. Do you you mentioned about getting your kids into the kitchen sometimes. Tell us about that, how that can help to boost their nutrition and their health.
Oh my goodness me, it is so significant. And I know that people like me will go on about this one, but if you can get a child involved in growing food, even if it's just in a pot on the windowsill, if you can get them involved in growing food and then actually getting into preparing food, making it themselves. I mean, when children do actually cook stuff at school, they can't wait to bring it home and let you taste it. It's so exciting for them. And getting them involved as young as possible is so, so important. Even if it's really a pain, they make a lot of mess, they don't do it properly, you're really busy, it's just important to have them develop that skill with knowing where food comes from, for a start. One of the things I loved about baby led weaning that really made me write the book was, when children do baby led weaning, they're eating food in its normal state right from the offset, and they know what it looks like. They're not tricked by a puree that's been masked by pear or something sweet to cover over the vegetable. They know exactly what a carrot tastes like, what it looks like, what it feels like, what it's like in their hair, what it's like on the floor. All of that is part of learning and building a good relationship with food.
Yeah, absolutely love this. I think it sounds like you're really real with children. You want them to know what's there rather than covering things up.
Yeah, I think it's really, really important. But at the same time, again, it's that balance between, you know, you saying that you're hiding stuff in your child's granola. Yeah, I mean, you're doing that because you've got her best interests at heart and you want her to be healthy. You know that granola on its own is not enough. There's nothing wrong with that. So again, it's just about, I think it's being open, having open discussions and doing it in a way where there isn't any pressure and they understand why you're doing what you're doing, which at her age, so at age 8, one of the reasons why the brain development side of things is important is because the reasoning part of the brain doesn't come in until that age. So if somebody tells you that if you eat an apple every day, it's good for you, up until the age of 8, you don't have any argument for that. You just take it as, oh, okay, that's what it is. So you can, at this age, you can have discussions around, you know, why you eat certain things and what they do for your body. And I always focus on the positives. So again, with children, I will often talk about superheroes and princesses and people that they look up to or they admire, and how certain attributes, like they've got really nice hair, and I'll explain these are the things that you need for your hair to be nice, and this is what this person would be eating in order to do that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do the same. I like to explain to my daughter about all the things, because I'm really into this. I also changed my life through nutrition, because I had specific health issues and nutrition brought me back to health. So I'm very passionate about it. And I say to my daughter, you know, if you have enough fiber, this helps you go to the bathroom. You don't want to be stuck not being able to go. It doesn't feel good, because there have been times where she's been constipated. I said, well, that means you need to have more oats in your cereal, because that's going to help you to go. And then when you go, then you're going to feel a lot better. Your body works better. And also when you have fish, that's going to make your skin really nice. It helps your brain work. It means you can see properly because it's got good fats in it. And she makes these connections and she understands. And that's what I want, because obviously they won't always be with us, will they?
No. And I think if at a young age they realise that food can be a superpower and they can use that, you know, to their advantage, and they learn that, I think that's such a gift to give children.
Yeah. Okay, this sounds fantastic. We're going to be back in a minute to talk about how children reflect their parents, the whole family approach, stressed mums, and what you can do about it after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself on the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchsip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% using the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchsip.co.uk, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We're here with Judy Clark. She's a registered nutritional therapist and author of Baby-Led Weaning Step by Step, available in all good bookshops and Amazon. You can find out more about her on julieclarknutrition.co.uk, and you can follow her on Facebook and Instagram, just look up Julie Clark Nutrition. Today we're talking about family health, children's health, stress mums. Now, Julie, we spent quite a lot of time talking about food habits before the age of 8, and quite a few times throughout this interview today, you've talked about how children reflect their parents, and a few times you've talked about how, you know, when mums have been on low-fat diets or on diets all the time, how does this then impact children? How do they then reflect their parents?
Yeah, I love this question. And this was something that dawned on me a few years ago, and it led me to creating something that I call the Healthy Mirror Method. And it was to do with, I think I was having a conversation with my daughter one day, and she was really quite young at the time. And I just thought to myself, she is a little mini version of me. And I started to look at other parents and their kids, and it just dawned on me that, yeah, our children are a total reflection of us, and they don't ever do what we say, they do what we do. And so they learn all these behaviours and their relationship with food and health and even things like how to deal with stress through the parents. So, yeah, I've got this impression that children are just running around and just being a reflection of us. So when we're stressed, they're stressed. When we're eating well, they tend to eat well. I think it all goes together.
Fantastic. And tell us a bit more about this mirror method.
So the healthy mirror method is, so it's my, I brought together the, I'm very much into and have trained in the brain science side of things, together with nutrition and life coaching and EFT, which is the tapping. So I kind of brought it all together to support families so that every part of their well-being was connected. So the way that they think and feel, how what their environment is like, and then how they eat, the energy, the mind and the life kind of all came together and gives you like a total look at, a very holistic look at your health and that family unit and how that can basically bring up the next generation, getting rid of this, I think, especially for my age group and probably the next 10 years down, being brought up in this very fast-paced world with, you know, you can just go onto an app and get fast food delivered to you. It's trying to move that next generation away from that. And I think if you get the family involved, especially the mums, and the kids reflect the mums, if you sorted the mum out, you've pretty much sorted the child out.
How easy is it to change a mum?
It's really, really fantastic work to do. I absolutely love it because nowadays mums are expected to be super women and work and raise the family and, you know, even the things that we required. You will know this because you've got an 8-year-old. The costumes and things that we have to send our kids into at school sometimes, and we're asking a lot of ourselves. So when I'm able to work with a mum that is just on that treadmill in overwhelm, and we're able to step out of that and support the body so that the energy is up, sleep is better, the mood is better, and then see how that impacts the whole family. Because at the end of the day, when a mum is struggling, it impacts that whole family unit. The mum is really such a centre point of that. Would you agree with that, Dora? Because obviously you're a mum.
Yeah, definitely. I'm running the house, basically. It all comes from me, definitely. And if I'm not on the ball, then everything falls apart. But not terribly, but it doesn't work as well.
Exactly.
Tell us a bit more about the mechanics of supporting the mum practically and emotionally. So I know for myself, for us to be healthy, I do actually have to do a lot of prep, but I try and make it really easy for myself because I don't like cooking. However, I do recognize that it's very important that we eat well. So I just try and do a lot of shortcuts for the nutritional aspect. That's what I'm talking about. Like I'll buy pre-chopped frozen onions, pre-chopped frozen leeks. I'll buy chopped carrots, anything, a baby tomatoes, then I don't need to chop them. Baby cucumbers can be eaten whole. Anything that's going to save me time, I'll buy like plant-based coleslaw because we don't eat dairy in our family. So coleslaw, I don't have to make that myself. I buy 3 or 4 tubs a week. We'll add that to the side of our food. Everything has to be made easy because we're really busy and I have to be realistic. And then I will batch cook a lot of stuff on a Sunday, maybe for 2 hours, and I'll get my daughter to help. And then I'll put that in the freezer. And then we'll have a few easy options that we buy from the supermarket that are healthy and easy, like fish, omega-3 fish fingers, or sometimes some of the healthier vegetarian sausages, things like that. That's how I practically make it work for myself so that I know that we're all going to be eating well. And I've got to watch my husband because if he doesn't take a healthy lunch with him, let me tell you, he will be going to McDonald's.
Yeah.
And then he'll be in a mood because he doesn't like eating badly, but he likes good food, like health, like hot food, that is to say. So yeah, I have to mentally plan, and sometimes you just don't want to do this. Actually, you feel that you want a time off, but you know that if you don't, it's going to be worse. So I just have to get it done. It's all about getting the food delivery, finding the time to make the food, to prep it, to think ahead actually about what is, are your kids and your husband and you going to be eating for that week?
This is such a refreshing conversation, Dora, because I think a lot of people have the impression that because we are nutritionists that we've got it all perfect, and it's impossible to do that. So I completely agree with making it easy. Making it easy to be healthy is so important, but quite often we put major obstacles in our way and we make eating unhealthy easier than it is to eat healthy. So it's just looking at, yeah, the little thing, simple things that you can do to just make life easy. And I think one of the most stressful things is when you've been busy all day and it's the evening, and it's that time of the evening when the kids always are a bit more demanding. Your stress bucket is full up, so you've not got much capacity left. And then you don't know what's for dinner.
Yeah.
You don't know what, you know, everybody's going, they're hungry, you're hungry, and you haven't prepared anything. That, to me, is so incredibly stressful.
Yeah.
So taking the time to do meal planning, as boring as it is, and as
it is, you know, boring.
Lots of people resist it, but I've heard so many people's lives transformed having done the meal planning exercise on a Sunday.
It's, you know, so what I do, Judy, I've even bought the Tupperware, you know, the Pyrex Tupperware.
Yeah.
So basically my pre-cooked food is in the freezer in the Tupperware, which is the right size. I can either do it per person or per family, that depending on the size.
Yeah.
And it literally comes out of the freezer and it just goes in the oven. It's like a ready meal, but it's my one that I've made.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do the same. And the other thing that I love is the slow cooker, you know.
It's amazing. Tell us, explain to our audience what that means, because it sounds long and laborious, but we know it's easy and it's nutritious.
With the slow cooker, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So a slow cooker is an oven that cooks really, really low heat for many hours. You leave it on all day and you can just chuck all sorts of things in there. I mean, I'm one of these people that when you follow some of the recipes, it says, oh, you know, saute the onions and brown off the meat. I don't bother with any of it. Throw it all in the slow cooker. And just switch it on. And also the other thing I quite like doing, which is really simple, is putting the ingredients that will go in a slow cooker in a freezer bag and putting freezer packs in the freezer. So that if you know, oh my goodness me, this next week coming up is really super busy, you can just take those freezer packs out and put them in the slow cooker and everything's already there. So the herbs are in there, whatever you're using, you know, everything's ready to go.
What do you put in your bag? So it'll be like, which herbs?
Yeah, so say I was going to do, I don't know, a chicken and rice dish in the slow cooker. I'd chop up the chicken, shove it in the freezer bag, any vegetables that I'm putting in there, shove that in the freezer bag, and, you know, some fresh herbs, just chop them up, tarragon or something, whatever I'm using, rosemary in that particular recipe, throw it all together in the freezer bag, and then it's just all ready to go.
I love it. The other thing that I like, I wonder if you ever do this, is omelets, and then throwing in whatever you've got in there to make it healthier.
Yep.
Do you ever do that?
I do. And it's one of my, you know, when you are busy and you haven't planned, an omelette is my go-to emergency meal. You know, you can do so much with an omelette, can't you?
Yeah. We add, I've always got smoked salmon in the fridge, soaked salmon. I add in parsley to it, tomatoes. I can add in so much stuff to that. It becomes a meal in itself. But then you can have some, like, if you don't have time to make pasta or noodles or rice, sometimes I just make whole grain toast with some nice pure butter on it. That's carbohydrates you can have on the side. So you can make things easy.
Yeah, it is about making things easy. And the other thing that I've done for years is I have an emergency meal plan. So my emergency meal plan is really quick and simple meals that I know that other people in the house can help with. The children can help prepare. My husband can cook if needed. And I've got a shopping list saved for it. So if I can see that, you know, in a couple of weeks' time, I'm going to be really busy, then we will revert to the emergency meal plan. And the rest of the people in the family know that when we're on an emergency meal plan, it's because mum is really busy, you know?
Yes, I've got you. And you mentioned some points that your kids get involved in the cooking. Are they ever able to prepare things on their own?
They're getting to that stage. Absolutely. My daughter in particular has a very keen interest in cooking and loves it. And she's got her own almost professional knives and things now because it makes life easier if you've got the right tools, right? So she's got a set of knives and things that she can use. And yeah, she's very, very close to be able to preparing things that, you know, they can do things like scrambled eggs and stuff themselves, make porridge and smoothies. But evening meals, we're getting there, Dora. We're so getting there.
Good. You've got to train them up because then, you know, they'll be cooking for you when you're older, hopefully.
Yes, exactly.
So how would you get them ready to get into the cooking so that, you know, that you talked about the, you know, introducing the foods in the right way, definitely the food habits before the age of 8. And then obviously they've got an interest now. What are your thoughts in terms of getting your kids into cooking? How did you do it? Was it just gradual?
When the kids were really young, I had them both in the kitchen with me a lot anyway. So I would just, if my daughter was in the, what's it called? The hammock thing, you know, the, can't think of the right word now. She would be against me, or she'd be facing outwards.
Oh, I know, the baby sling.
A baby sling, that's it. I couldn't think of the word.
Yeah,
she'd be in a baby sling. My son would be in the high chair. We'd be in the kitchen, and I would be always telling them what I was doing. You know, I'm chopping an onion, I'm peeling a carrot. And any time that I could get them, you know, I'd say, hold the vegetables or play with the vegetables while I'm, you know, wash the vegetables. You know, you can start off really easy, peeling oranges or, you know, mashing bananas with your hands is actually really good fun when you're only two, you know. So,
yeah,
anything that they could stir this, you know, make a noise with these pots. Not every day because, you know, you've got to still get the food done and everybody's got to be fed. But starting off really, really young with them seeing how I prepare the food and then giving them little things to do. And I love those child-friendly knives, the serrated edge ones. Uh-huh. So as soon as they were able to get involved with that, they both had one of those knives and cut fruit and soft vegetables and mushrooms and things like that. And we would always taste them raw and taste them cooked and talk about the difference and all of that kind of stuff. But just if you're in the kitchen, get the kids involved in the kitchen.
Lovely. Do you ever do any cooking classes for kids, Julie?
Yes, I haven't done any now since the whole COVID thing. I haven't done any for a couple of years, but yes, I do a number of classes for children that look at various things, lunches, healthy snacks, all sorts of things, Christmas treats we've done, and it's fun and they love it, you know, they really love it.
Is it just for the kids or is it for the mums as well?
It's normally for the kids, but I do with my group, I do groups with mums and things, and we do cooking over Zoom and things, we do live cooking stuff. But yeah, most of it's aimed at, was aimed at the children, the fun workshops.
It's been absolutely wonderful to talk to you, Julie. If anybody's interested in Julie's work, They can find out more about her on julieclarknutrition.co.uk. Julie is a registered nutritional therapist, and she's specialising in all aspects of child and infant nutrition, including baby-led weaning. And she's the author of Baby-Led Weaning Step by Step. Today, we've been talking about family health, children's health, stress mums. I hope you found it useful, listeners, and definitely listen in next week for next week's show. And if you have any questions or comments, you can contact me via my website, www.nutrihill.net. Until then, thank you for joining us on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.